Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Silverson, your host for this episode of Cattle HQ. Joining me is Dr. Russ Daly to discuss yonies, a disease that affects cattle herds throughout South Dakota. So welcome back, Dr. Daly, to Cattle HQ.
Thanks for having me.
So yonies is a bacterial disease that affects both beef and dairy. Oftentimes it was considered only a dairy issue, but I know that you have been noting them here in the beef industry in South Dakota too. So should our listeners really need to be concerned about it? Is it a big hype out there, or should they be concerned?
No, definitely should be concerned depending on what stage of production or what your role in the cattle industry is. When we see yonies questions, or when I get yonies questions, they're mostly from beef producers now. So there's a lot of questions out there. How do I deal with this? This is not a disease that's going to wipe out your whole herd. It's going to be one of those really insidious things that is just going to be a nagging thing for, you know, for potentially years to come, and it might get worse as the years go on. If you're not involved in the cattle industry and you're just hearing about this, and you know, from a human health standpoint, from a food safety standpoint, there's no consideration at all. This is a cattle disease. It doesn't affect people. It doesn't affect the meat or the milk. It's something that we deal with people who raise cattle.
So can you describe what yonies is, you know, what age are animals infected, and what type of symptoms would you see?
Yeah, so you mentioned this is a bacterial disease. It is an infection of the intestine more than anything else. The infection of the small intestine. It's a slow-growing, chronic infection that takes a long time to develop in an infected animal. So when you have an intestinal infection, you have the signs of that infection would be referable to the digestive tract. So you'd have diarrhea. You'd have a progression of that diarrhea. And what maybe more profoundly is affecting the animal is not just the loss of fluid, but the loss of nutrients. The animal, the gut, isn't able to absorb the protein and energy that those animals need to keep weight on, or let alone produce meat or milk. So those animals will progressively lose weight as they're suffering from the diarrhea. So it's primarily an intestinal disease. Now, in some animals that are allowed, where the infection is allowed to go on, for example, if we don't cull them from the herd and it progresses in the individual animal, it can spread to other parts of the animal's body, but that's not something we very commonly see.
I think in the past, it used to be kind of chronic wasting disease, not chronic wasting disease, but kind of the animal wastes away in some respects.
Yes.
Because the intestinal system is not working properly.
Yep.
Is that really kind of
a progressive weight loss for no other reason and no other real signs? Those animals still want to eat. They're hungry. They want to eat and drink, but everything just runs right through them, and it doesn't. They're not putting on any weight or producing the milk for their calf or for the bulk tank if you're a dairy cow. So it is a progressive weight loss and the diarrhea, they're really the only outward signs we see of yonies disease in animals.
I should be clear, this is not chronic wasting disease either, like we see in deer.
I
spoke on that. It's just that, like you said, it's just a continual weight loss. And maybe
you
should clarify it is not chronic wasting disease.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a specific term for the disease that affects deer and elk. But I mean, you mentioned, you know, you're right. It is a chronic, you know, little lowercase c wasting W. lowercase situation. You know, it's a chronic situation, and it's a wasting, and it describes Yoni's disease actually pretty well.
So when are animals typically affected with yonis? At what age?
So I mentioned that it's a slow-growing chronic infection. So as a result, I mean, it's really slow-growing. So we're talking about animals that won't show signs of the disease until they're several years old, even if they were exposed to the germ when they're young baby calves. So it just takes that long for it to develop in the animals. So typically we won't see animals that are less than a year old, usually not less than 3 or 4 years old in beef situations. So it's a the age at which they show the signs is usually pretty advanced. And there's a difference between when the animal becomes exposed and to the germ and when they start showing the signs. You know, for a lot of our diseases, you know, it's a pretty short incubation period, that period between the exposure and the clinical signs. So you can think back in your mind, well, yeah, a week ago, you know, this happened, this new animal came in or whatever. You know, if we're trying to figure out what happened, you know, 3 or 4 years ago to this animal, boy, that's about impossible. So that makes it even more challenging to deal with the disease on a herd level, to try to figure out what the sources were.
So a common question I get is how is it transmitted? While I was at Dakota Fest this year, someone came up and we started talking about yonis. So it's kind of ironic that you brought it up at another meeting about yonis. And he was asking all the questions about transmission. How is it transmitted? So could you
Yeah.
go into that?
Pretty simple. It's an intestinal disease. That's where the bacteria kind of sets up shop. So it's eliminated from the body or shed from the body in the manure. No real other forms of transmission. So, I mean, that makes it simple, but it makes it more challenging too. So the bacteria is going to leave the animal in an infected animal's manure, and then the susceptible animals, the calves in this case, usually will pick it up from nosing around in the animal's environment, from nursing, you know, dirty teats. You know, it's not hard to imagine a little calf nosing around and licking around in those contaminated environments. And in a little calf, it doesn't take much for that exposure. It doesn't take much of a dose of that exposure of the germ to cause to start the infection. So it's a fecal-oral transmission. And so the big risk within a herd is if you have an animal, especially one that's has loose stools and is starting to show the clinical signs of yonis, and that they're if they're exposed to, or on the other hand, I should say, the calves are exposed to that sick animal, that's a really good place for transmission to take place. So, easier said than done, but you know, eliminating those sources of manure for those little baby calves, that's a real key in stopping the transmission. And of course, in dairies, you kind of got that figured out, right? You have maternity pens, and the calf is only in that pen for a very short period of time, even if you do have a sick dairy cow, for example, giving birth to that calf, and they're taken out of that cow environment into the baby calf environment, which is not contaminated. So there's some reasons. Yoni's disease is one of the reasons why they do segregate those baby calves in a manner like that. We don't have that luxury in beef herds, unfortunately.
So it cannot be transmitted, excuse me. So it can't be transmitted in colostrum or through semen or anything like that. It is transmitted through fecal oral, through taking up fecal matter manure through the mouth.
Yep, that's and there's no always or never, right, with animal diseases. That scenario is, I swear, 95, 98% of it is the fecal oral. Now, if you have a cow that's allowed to progress with the infection, like I said, that infection can go to other parts of her body, so it can get into the into the milk, into things like colostrum. In some cases, it can get into the uterus and get into the calf before it's born. But again, these are pretty, we don't really see that too often. We usually find those animals before they're allowed to, progress in that infection, that to that extent. And as far as the milk goes, in a beef calf situation, it's really hard to tease out, well, did the calf get infected from infected milk? The milk secretion from the cow, or was it from the teat, that was in the manure that animal produced. So that's really hard to tease out. So the question, as far as transmission goes, yeah, there th th that's one reason why dairies pasteurize the colostrum and pasteurize the milk. If they're going to use the cow's milk, they're going to pasteurize it for the baby calves, not just because of the potential for yonis to get through the into the milk, but also just because of the contamination that you find when you harvest that milk for that calf. Then the other issue about the cow giving birth to a yonis disease calf, yonis infected calf. That's one of the things that we'll talk to producers about is it's probably not very common if you had a positive Yoni's cow and she happened to give birth and she had clinical signs right after birth. It's not a slam dunk that that calf is necessarily infected from in utero or before birth exposures. But of course, if you have a positive cow, her manure is going to be, the most common way for that calf to become infected. So on a practical basis, the milk and the before birth infection, a little hard to tease out, because the calves have other ways to pick it up fecal orally. But we generally will say back to the in utero or the before birth infection, if you have a cow that gave, if you know a cow is positive for yonis, it's not a good idea to keep that animal's heifer calf or bull calf in the herd as a replacement because of the increased chance that they would, 3 or 4 years down the road end up with the infection becoming clinical themselves.
So I get the question quite a bit about, and it doesn't necessarily just yonis, but we're focused on yonis right now on this Cattle HQ podcast episode. But do can wildlife such as deer or antelope transmit yonis?
Well, they can get yonis. They're pretty susceptible to, picking it up and becoming sick themselves. I think what we don't really know very well is what to what extent they are involved in passing it on, to cattle. My thought is it probably is pretty minimal compared to, there's potential for contact for sure, but it wouldn't be near as much as within the beef herd themselves, within the cattle to cattle transmission. So, but it's important to realize too that they could play a role. To what extent, I don't think we really know.
How about waterfowl or, geese, ducks, those
Yep,
kinds of things?
fortunately they're not involved in this, so there shouldn't be any problems at all with the slough that's next door. Not there's other problems, but not Yoni's disease.
That's great news. We have no control of those little rascals as
Yeah.
they fly in and out. So, that is, I guess that is a positive with yonis, like you said, 98 plus percent is through fecal oral
Yeah.
contamination, and typically that's from cattle to cattle or
Yeah.
so. Kind of going back though, you mentioned bulls, and we've been talking mainly about our cow herd up to this point of our podcast. So let's kind of go back to bulls a little bit. A lot of those bulls will turn into steers. So should there ever be concern? Well, there shouldn't be a concern in the feed lot because those
No.
animals are typically slaughtered prior to any type of clinical signs being shown. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The only real population we need to worry about are the older animals that would stay around in the herd. So yeah, de you're definitely right. Even if a little calf would be infected with yonis, even probably pretty profoundly, you'd never see that really in a feedlot situation. You know, they're not allowed to, hang around that long for the infection to develop. So yeah, fortunately, and like I said, it's not a food safety issue. It's not something that we really worry about in feedlot animals. It's just in those replacements, the ones we want to keep around and use for future cows and bulls that are the potential problem.
So how you'd mentioned that, the beef industry is seeing more yonis cases in South Dakota. How often, kind of in general, how often do you see yonis detected in herds in our state?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it would be important to know that and kind of monitor that going forward, or see how we're doing. There's really no way to know. There's no central reporting mechanism. It is technically a reportable disease, but it isn't something that's recorded, as far as case investigations from our animal health, regulatory people. So really, all we have to go on is what we have come through the diagnostic lab for testing, and that's kind of probably pretty skewed, because people are testing for a reason, when they suspect something going on. So unfortunately, there's no real way to know, what the prevalence of yonis is in beef herds, especially in South Dakota, and not even really in dairy herds. It's something we just don't keep track of, which it would be great to have more of a handle on that, and designating a herd as positive, and some of the testing things I know we'll get into later, but we just don't have a good repository. But what I would say as an extension veterinarian, and from speaking with veterinarians across the state, this is something that they're dealing with more and more every year. It's not something going away, and for the most part, it's herds that are new to the game, who don't know about yonis before, and now they have this animal that's scouring and wasting away in front of them, and now we figured out it's yonis. Now what do we do? So I think the awareness is getting more, is getting greater within beef operations, and thanks to you for this podcast for getting some of that word out. So that's helping us. But as far as a good numbers, it's kind of anybody's guess, unfortunately.
So you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that a lot of the calls you are getting now are more from the beef industry. Why do you think I mean, it still exists in the dairy industry. I mean, it hasn't gone away.
Right.
But why do you think there's been this number of producers in the beef industry starting to see more and more yonis?
Yeah,
What caused
so
that transition? What caused that?
yeah, I don't know that we know exactly. But you're right, dairy farms, most of them would have some level of yonis, but they've been dealing with it. They've known about it for years. They have their internal mechanisms for testing, and so they'll, for example, test all the animals that they're drawing up, and make sure that any positive animal leaves the herd, as soon as there's another little problem. They're not keeping them around, but also that their calves are not kept as replacements, and that they're dealt with appropriately. The other thing about dairies now is that they become much more segmented, in that you'll have one farm that the animals are freshened at, or that they have their calves, and the calves stay there or go to calf raising facilities, and a whole other farm that milks the cows, and a whole other farm that dries the cows. So they become just that segmentation has actually been good for disease control in those calves, because the calves don't spend time around the older animals where they would become infected. But why it's increasing in beef herds, I think awareness is one thing. But as time goes on, and we've dealt with herds that have imported more bulls And by imported, I mean just buying them from other sources, maybe other states, that we see more and more of a critical mass of animals that have kind of spread the disease to other herds. And now that's kind of a multiplying factor where we see more herds that are having problems than we did before. So I think, yeah, a couple things, awareness, and maybe even we just have more animals being shipped to more places now.
So you had mentioned at the beginning again of this podcast that one of the best ways to help control or prevent yonis is managing your manure. And I would assume that's really the number one way to protect your herd from yonis entering. Is that right?
Yeah, from the within herd spread for sure. So in manure on a beef farm, that's pretty tough to contain. We really have to focus in. I mean, you have that cow there that's a little loose in the stool, maybe she's not keeping maybe as much weight on. Those are the ones to really focus on. I mean, there can be normal looking animals out in the herd that are shedding the bacteria, but the ones who are sick are really shedding a lot. So those would be the ones to find the sick pen for, find, segregate them from maybe not necessarily their calf, but from everybody else's calf for sure. So noticing those sick animals and segregating those, can be a really important thing to do. And then just, yeah, general manure management and making sure that we're able to, provide clean bedded areas for our cattle as much as possible, especially during calving season, and especially when those calves are around, when they're really young. As the calf gets older, they get more resistant to the infection. So calving time cleanliness to me becomes really more important than later on even.
So if you have a suspect cow, you think you might have yonis or multiple cows, what do you do next?
Well,
What are the next steps?
So first of all is to confirm the suspicion, and work with your veterinarian. There's In an animal that's sick from yonis, it's pretty easy to find a test that's going to find it. If it is yonis, I mean, cows can get sick and lose weight and have diarrhea for other reasons. So a confirmatory test, you can use a blood test. You can use a fecal test to detect the organism in the manure. That'll tell you, first of all, if it's yonis. But even before that, segregating it and making sure that animal doesn't have contact, especially with other young calves that are in the herd. That's the first thing to do before you do anything else. And then, diagnosing, knowing what you got. It's really not any use to just bury your head in the sand and I don't want to know. That's not the approach to take. It's knowing what you have is the first step in trying to do something about it.
So you talked about testing. What is the best time, or when is the best time to test? So maybe I should back up. So you suspect potentially one or two cows in the herd based on clinical symptoms. Is it necessary to test the whole herd, or can you just test those couple animals?
Yeah, it depends on your goals for what your operation is getting at. As long as we're going down the testing hole, we'll talk a little bit about that. Yonis testing a cow for yonis isn't a slam dunk. It's hard to get 100% accuracy on a test, and it's not due to the lab being bad at it. If the evidence of the disease is there in the animal, we're going to find it. But the problem is yonis is a disease where it sequesters itself so much from the rest of the body and from the immune system. So when that bacteria gets into the cow is taken up by these macrophages, these white blood cells that kind of serve as a little armor around that bacteria. Bacteria can expand within the macrophages, they burst out and then they infect others. But it's a hard thing sometimes to find the animal's response through antibodies, through her immune response, or even sometimes to find the bacteria in the manure. Until that animal has progressed, within her infection. So that scenario I just said, determining whether a sick cow has yoni, whether it's yonis or something else, the tests are really good at that. Now, what it's less good at is finding infected animals before they become sick, and usually. So it depends a little bit on your goals for the herd, on what you want to do next. If you want to know where you're at, testing your whole herd is not a bad idea, and finding out, just how bad is it. And there's some considerations there, and this is something you want to have a discussion with your veterinarian about. If you do, and this happens all the time, I get the questions. I found we had a bull, the yonis. Now what do I do? Do I test the whole herd, and what do I do? If you are a commercial operator and all of your calves go to the feedlot, might not be all that important for you to know. And depending on your incidence, how many animals over the years will get it, it might not be worth your while to go and do a whole herd test. If you're a seed stock producer and you're selling either if you're keeping your own animals within your herd, that's one thing, or especially if you're selling bulls and heifers to other operations, then it becomes more important for you to know and for you to try to do something about the incidence and the level of it in your herd. So that's the first thing is what's your goals as a producer. The other consideration too that plays into this is who in my herd has this? So, and what I mean by that, is it animals you bought from other places, or is it your own home-raised animals? So most of the time, well, I wouldn't say a lot of the time when I have these conversations with veterinarians and producers, it's that bull that we bought. It's that heifer, is that cow that we bought as a replacement heifer from somebody else's herd. So what happens a lot of times with those is they will come from an infected herd, and that's not necessarily an indictment of where you bought the animal from. They might not have been, it's such a long lag time with the infection, they might not have had any idea they even had an inkling of yonis in their animals. But the other thing is those animals a lot of times will become sick after a stress, or after a movement. So, especially like buying bred cows, for example, the time that they're gonna start to show illness is during that, or right after that transportation, or maybe around calving time. So stresses will bring on those clinical signs. So it's that's a good question to ask yourself as you're trying to figure out what's going on within the dynamics of the herd. Is this something that's just a purchase thing? And I brought it in, and now, yeah, I got to worry about what other calves I had in my herd. They were exposed to these sick animals. Or is it a cow that I've raised from birth, and kept her in my herd? That's another situation, and that means you probably got a lot more out there in the herd than is just that one cow. So then that would spur me to want to do more of a whole herd test and see where we're at, rather than just, okay, well, that's a bull, that's a cow we bought from somewhere else, and now we can exp that's how we can explain the fact that that animal is infected.
Don't they choose to do a whole herd test because it was a home-raised animal? that tested positive for yonis, would it just be a 1 year type deal and you're done, like bringing everything through at preg checking or everything through? Because you said it's expressed when there's a stress on those animals.
Yeah.
And so I guess there's a couple of things. Timing is important, right? Like when you're doing it, it's easy to do it at preg checking because they're all coming through.
Right.
Each and every cow or each and every female is, but it's not a highly stressful time of their life,
Right, exactly.
versus after calving or when they were, these home-raised animals. So timing is critical, but also kind of going back to my original question is if you are doing a whole herd test, can I do it 1 year only and be done and say, oh, she's negative, or yep, she's positive, and I need to send her down the road? Or is it a multi-year type of monitoring of
Yeah,
that disease?
it's not going to be a 1 year deal, I'm afraid to tell you. It's because within that year, you have and you have negative animals, and that's great. It could be worse, but within that group of negative animals, you might, depending on your herd situation, you might have some animals that are infected, but just not infected enough to turn the test positive. So, and that goes for younger animals, especially. So, for instance, I told you that, younger animals don't get, clinical signs. They also don't test positive even if they're infected very often. So, it's not even worth it to do like our replacement heifers or even that yearling bull you bought. It'd be great to test it before it even gets to your place, but that's not going to do us any good because even if they're infected, they're not going to be positive on the test yet. So that for that reason, we will do, all the 2 year olds and up, for example, in the cow herd, but that doesn't mean anything about the heifers that are coming in or maybe the purchased animals that came in. So as the dynamics of that cow herd change, it's like a different group every year. But the big thing would be that you'd have negative animals 1 year that just aren't far enough along to test positive. So yeah, it's a in order to be really confident that you're a negative herd, this would be a multiple year endeavor.
Yeah, it's timing, age, there's a lot of different types of considerations to take in
Right,
when thinking
right.
about yonis, and especially when it comes to when it starts to show clinical signs. Like you said, they're usually older animals, to when you should be testing them and what age. So
Right.
I guess probably the big take-home message is if you have any thought that this might be an issue or a problem, is to contact your veterinarian.
Right. And there's options, there's blood testing you can do, or there's fecal testing. There's differences between those things too. And I think our profession is gravitating more towards the fecal tests. Just because the germ is there, in the manure. That's not to say they can't be what we call intermittent shedders. They could be have the bacteria in their manure one day and in the next week not. But for the most part, that gives us more information as far as the status of those cows, usually than the blood test. The blood test will lag a little bit. But I mean, sometimes it's just more convenient to take blood. Sometimes it's more convenient to take manure. Cost-wise, it's about the same when it comes down to testing. The PCR test is a very sensitive way of detecting Yoni's bacteria in the manure, and that's what we usually use. Now, that's an expensive test, but it's so sensitive that we can pool together five or six manure samples and run that as one test. So that brings the cost down. Now, if you really want to know exactly which animal is in that group of five or six, then you still have to go back and do the individual expensive PCR. So depending on the level of infection in a herd, it might not save you too much money. But I think most people feel that you get more information out of the fecal testing than doing a blood test because the blood test is going to be more for that instance where does she have yonis or does she have something else?
Yeah. Well, it's about time to wrap up this episode of Cattle HQ. I thank you, Dr. Daly, for joining us. Any last comments or thoughts on yonis before we end?
It's something to just keep be aware of, and it's not a one size fits all response. You know, if you have a bull that has yonis or a cow that has yonis, it's not necessarily the the end of your operation. There's things that we can do, and it might not, depending on your operation. There's different ways to deal with it. So contacting your veterinarian, reaching out to your extension people is a really good first step when you have these questions.
And there's always ways to help protect yourself, the biosecurity, and thinking about that as you purchase animals and things like that. And kind of going back to make sure everybody's fully aware that this is, not a food safety issue at all. And so all of our consumers can feel very comfortable that any of our milk and meat that enters our food supply is safe.
Right.
And
Absolutely. And we do have some pretty good resources on the extension, SDSU extension website to talk about some of the things we talked about too. So.
yeah, there is. I actually just hopped on our extension website right before this podcast episode and was doing some reading. And Dr. Daly, you have some really great articles out there for producers
Yeah,
to read.
thanks.
So, well, before we end this episode of Cattle HQ, I just want to give a shout out to our Cattle HQ live webinars that are being held every month on a variety of topics. If you'd like to learn more or register for those webinars, you can go to our extension website at extension.sdstate.edu. And these are free 1-hour webinars. Once again, this has been Cattle HQ brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for all the latest beef information. Until our next episode, choose kindness.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal. It's a byproduct.